Are you worried that the countdown we do every episode is probably the best part of the show?
I don't think I'm worried.
Yeah, worried might be too strong. freaked out.
I'm elated.
Freaked out, like, yeah. Hast du Angst?
Sure.
That's what I'm asking you.
No, no.
Keine Angst.
No, not at all.
Okay. Hello and welcome to episode 324 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is...
Adam. I'm a little congested.
All the snow?
No, I just had a little bit of a sneezing fit, so I'm not sure if it's allergies or if I'm getting a cold or something. I don't know. But I'm very congested, so I apologize. Normally, my voice is much silkier and smoother than it is right now.
Mellifluous.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Cough medicine, Amazon.
Yeah, if you do buy your... Do you take cough medicine?
No, but Kleenex... Get some Kleenex.
Yeah, I don't take that either. I use it, but don't ingest it. I've not taken cough medicine probably since I was a kid.
Yeah, I don't think it really. Well, maybe I don't know. I don't get a cough very often, but I'm not sure that cough medicine really has ever worked for me.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but I believe it's cough suppressant, and yeah, I don't know. Do they still sell Dimetapp?
I'm sure they do.
Great flavored Dimetapp. That was my childhood.
Okay. I think I've used... No, I don't think I've used that. There's something else that I've used. Is Benadryl a cough medicine?
No, I think that's...
Or is that an allergy thing? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't have the allergies, so I'm not really familiar. I've heard of it.
Okay.
No, but I was just remembering because I remember when I was a kid, like a handful of times maybe had, you know, a spoonful of Dimetapp. And... there was something, a Robitussin? Does that sound like something?
Sure, sure. That's one, yeah. I think.
But I remember that because when I got to high school, some of the we had a name for them, but I don't know if I say it here.
Okay.
Some of the cooler kids.
Right.
They would drink a half a bottle of whichever the cough medicine that had codeine in it.
Okay, and get That'd loopy. Be their move. They get loopy.
Yeah, drink half a bottle of that every day.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
No, no. I don't think they're running any Fortune 500 companies today. Yeah, I guess so.
Or
downward.
Maybe they are. Maybe that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, that's probably how, yeah. He's the CEO of Dimetapp, ironically. Yeah, so there's that. But if you do need Kleenex or cough medicine or whatever, hey, go to our site, click through the link and go to Amazon. Buy it there. Help us out.
Okay.
We appreciate it. I've never bought Kleenex on Amazon.
All right, something for you to do after the show.
Yeah, no, no.
Or during
no.
the show, maybe.
No, I'm all set.
Okay.
Yeah, doing just fine.
Okay.
So the weekly snow update, do you have green grass outside or is there still snow?
No, there's no snow now, so it seems like it's normal Vancouver weather again. It's like 15 degrees or 13 degrees and just pouring rain all the time. So. Big upgrade. We got the big upgrade, yeah.
Begging for some snow.
Yeah, no, I think I prefer this. I don't mind the rain. Yeah.
I know, you don't have to shovel rain.
That's right.
That's the beauty of it.
Better for driving, too. It's
true.
What we're used to.
Speaking of the rain and that whatnot, in the What's Going On segment of the show.
Sure.
I watched a movie called Singles with my wife.
Okay.
Do you know it?
Yeah.
From 1992, I believe.
Yeah, and it's very 92-ish, right?
Oh yeah, it's
Because there's a couple of notable people in that movie, but I'm drawing a blank right now. Who are
quite a few?
Yeah, who are the big stars of the day that are in that movie?
Matt Dillon.
Okay.
Bridget Fonda.
Yeah.
Campbell Scott.
Okay.
He's in there. Kira Sedgwick.
Yeah. Oh wow, I didn't even realize she was in there.
Eddie Vedder.
Wow.
Eddie Vedder is in the band that Matt Dillon plays in.
Right. And Matt Dillon is the big star of that movie, correct? Like, as far as for that time, he was the guy.
He's the biggest name.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, the main guy, I got to say it's Campbell Scott. Okay. I think that's the A story.
Right.
Great movie. A really good movie. Liked it. Hadn't seen it in a long time. And so, for me, it's hard to find movies that I can watch with my wife that, like, she hasn't seen and that she will get and that are good.
Mm.
It's a pretty strict criteria.
Right.
And so, and we tend to like older movies because, I don't know about you, but aside from kids' movies, nowadays they're not so good. The movies aren't very good.
Okay. I find.
And so, for whatever reason it is, I mean, I tend to like movies that were shot on film. Not because I'm a snob, really. Not like it's not even the film part of it. But it's just the when you shoot on film and edit and have to pump out prints, it seems that you're very, very deliberate with what you include and what you don't.
Okay.
And it just like much more dedication required to like every single frame, every single cut that you make. And so I find like the movies are, you know, generally better. Like, there's exceptions. I understand. Like there really is some good movies being made now, but not as many. And so I tend to like those ones better. Because now you put the digital on, you shoot, and you figure it out later. And it doesn't, it's not quite the same.
Gotcha.
Again, there's exceptions. And you know, I'm not being a grouchy old man. There's really, you know, great things that come with digital cinematography. But for the most part, so we watched Singles. That was the point.
Okay.
And I thought about, thought about one of our listeners who writes in occasionally. Stephen Flo, that's his name, online name.
Okay.
So he was around in the Seattle Sound. He was in a band during that time in Seattle.
But he's not in the movie.
I don't know. I'll have to ask him if he's in the movie.
Yeah.
I do know he did. They did open for Pearl Jam before they were Pearl Jam.
Wow.
You know what they're called?
No.
Mookie Blaylock.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and then ironically,
who was a player for the New York Mets, and he later
no, you're thinking of a different Mookie. That's not your fault.
Mookie Blaylock is Atlanta Hawk. I was thinking, yeah, Mookie Wilson.
But I believe he played for the
Mookie Blaylock played for the Atlanta Hawks. But
and
who
I
else
believe he played for the Sonics at that time?
Must have, otherwise it would
you're
be
thinking
pretty,
Mookie Wilson.
Pretty yeah, Mookie Blaylock yeah. was a pretty good basketball. I think maybe a couple time NBA All Star, a guard. He was a guard.
But
yeah.
he put the kibosh on them using his name. They said, "No, forget it, man. Like, no way." And then now on the flip side, it would have been a lot more beneficial for him, I think.
Gotcha.
But anyways, that's how they became Pearl Jam. But anyway, so I was thinking about that. But anyways. And in the movie, the rain part of it, how we got to this, is Seattle's much like Vancouver, a lot of rain. Kind of what makes the Pacific Northwest so wonderfully green. You know,
right.
It's a big price to pay, but the payoff is excellent. So I do like all the green trees and what have you. Good movie. Recommend checking it out again if you haven't seen it in a while. It was back when it's one of my favorite directors, too, Cameron Crowe.
Okay.
Like I love his movies right up until Almost Famous, which I think is one of his best movies. It's his best movie. One of my favorite movies ever made. Love that movie. And then he just stopped making good movies for some reason.
Hmm.
I don't know why.
I also enjoy Almost Famous. It was one of those movies that I bought right after it came out because I liked it so much in the theater. Back when you bought your DVDs.
I did the same.
Yeah.
I think somebody bought it for me. And then I went ahead and said, oh, I need the special edition, the director's version, too.
Right.
So I bought it twice. Never should have got the director's version. It's like half an hour, 45 minutes longer. Not nearly as good as the tight two-hour movie.
Right.
Yeah. Anyways, photographically, the movie Singles, if you do watch it, and I, again, suggest you do, see if you can notice the subtle use of blue and orange. And not so much subtle, really. Just really everything is blue and orange, almost the whole movie.
Okay.
So, like, we've talked about it in the past, how that's very, very popular, and especially in movies. And we did a whole episode all about it, the blue and the orange, a long, long time ago.
Is it a winter time of year movie? I can't remember.
No, I think it takes place over a couple of seasons.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, in the winter, it seems like the blue and orange theme becomes a little bit more obvious. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I wouldn't have thought of it as a something that would be done in a summer or spring theme.
If you watch it now, though, I mean, now that, especially now that I say it and tell you to look for it, it's actually too much. It's overdone, in my opinion, because some of them are like, wow, like that is. If you're not a cinema, if you're not a photographer or a cinematographer, you're probably not going to notice too much. But now that I point it out, okay, it's on. So there you go. Did you shoot anything interesting this week?
I don't think I did. Again.
Well, that's not really your fault.
Yeah, there. Again, there has been just more or less work days in between our last podcast, largely for me, and we haven't done anything that exciting. We did go to a hotel for an overnight, just for kind of a little spring break getaway, just near home. They had a special at the big hotel, the big River Rock Casino Hotel, which has a water slide, and we went and did that, and I brought my little point and shoot, and then decided there was really nothing worth taking a photo of. There was kids all over climbing up the water slides backwards, and it was a mess of humanity. So I just elected that there was no reason for taking a photo. I think I took a couple of real quick video clips just of the kids coming down. There was a couple of friends that they met there, and they did a kind of train of down the water slide, and so I took a couple of quick little video clips of that, but just for the archives. I don't think there's anything I'll really do with that video.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be good in 10 years.
Well, that's kind of why I took it, was, you know, they've kind of grown up with this same couple of friends, and so they've been playmates since they've been real little. Now, one of the kids is, you know, he's now grade 7, so teenager, voice changing, like all that stuff. So I just thought I'd pop a 20-second video into the archives, because it'll be neat looking back, exactly, just because they've been friends since they've all been really little.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Also, with not that many days between when we recorded last and when we're recording this.
Right.
Just to let people know, so it wasn't like, you know, you say this week. In these last couple of days, did you shoot anything interesting? And myself, not so much. I did have one photo I thought was kind of interesting. Speaking of blue and orange, there's my son in the blue and orange. Now, you see the title of the photo, so it's going to be not hard for you to guess what's going on here.
Right. I don't even have it up yet, so that's why the delay of my amazed reaction is me looking for the actual photo you're talking about. So I'm now almost seeing it. You're feeling my computer. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Yeah.
Firelight.
Yeah, okay, so now that you yell it out, I say, "Hey, guess where this was shot?"
Well, the title of the image was Firelight.
Yeah, but for you it is. I don't advertise that on the Instagram, though.
You should have titled it "Adam, Don't Say Firelight."
That would have been better. No, I think you would have opened with Firelight at that point. You would have before that.
Could this be Firelight?
It is. As a matter of fact, good call. Good eye, Adam. This is Firelight. So my son decided to go ahead. Well, he's actually thrown up before. Once in his life.
Okay.
And so he had a good year and a half streak going. He decided to break that. And it's been going around kindergarten. And we thought, oh, our kids dodged it. But my son did not. And so he put on a clinic of how to throw up. Just nonstop. And then which is weird, because he, having not ever really thrown up, maybe once, he did not understand what was happening.
Right. Yeah, it is so, a little bit. It's a little bit frightening for them at that age, yeah.
Yes, especially since he didn't really understand, like, up until the second that it came out, he really couldn't give us any warning or anything. It was just, oh, here it is. So that was delightful. That was a good 48 hours we had. So this was right in the middle of that. This was after the first day. Oh, and the best part, this happened after we recorded. So the lady who's the head of my kid's kindergarten is retiring this week after 20 years of running and like starting and running this kindergarten.
Okay.
Right? So they have a big party. Everybody comes, all the parents, all the past students and stuff. And so this room that normally, you know, has 50 people running around now has like a few hundred or whatever. I don't even know. 10,000. I'll ask Trump how many he knows.
Yeah, he's good at that.
He's good at assessing crowds. But anyway, so it's just elbow to elbow, just wall to wall. And my son is sitting, and my wife has to be part of this little choir. All the moms have gotten together, and they've written a song for her that they're going to perform. And they're all dressed in black, and they're, you know, they're about to go up. And my son is sitting on my wife's lap, and he decides now is the time to throw up for the first time. Just, and it's just mass. And I'm not even sitting next to them. There's not even any room, so I'm standing across the crowd. And she just comes running out. She is just completely covered in it. It's just she has to go up and sing in 5 minutes, covered in his throw up, which is exciting for her.
Yeah, that's not good.
Anyway, I get him out of there. Long story short, that all happens, and then so I tell him, all right, you know, he's kind of recuperating. We'll make a fire. This is very little to do with the picture, aside from the why my son looks like so morose in the picture. Okay. That's all. So we're sitting. We made a little campfire in the backyard, as you can do in Germany. It's totally acceptable. And so here he is, just sitting there as the sun's already dropped. Like it's getting just before darkness. So it's that last little bit of blue light kind of hitting his the back of his toque.
Yeah.
And then the light on him is 100% from the fire. There's no flash or additional light in here besides the fire and the last little bit of twilight.
Okay.
So I'm really pleased with the results.
Yeah, it looks good.
The happier picture would have been nicer.
Yeah.
But the whole point, this is a big, big roundabout story to tell you, this is why you buy a prime lens. You're not shooting this without a prime. You're probably not shooting this.
Right. Just unlikely to get an image because it's so dark. Is that what you're saying? Or yes. Too much clutter in the background or both?
Mostly that there's actually very little light here. In terms of camera wise, like you can see when you're outside, you can see, your eye can see, but in terms of what your camera's going to capture. Now this is the 5D Classic with the 85-1.8, as you know, is always there at f/1.8 at ISO 1600 on the Classic,
which is kind of like the absolute max you want to ever get there.
Oh, on the 5D Classic, that's way beyond the max.
Yeah.
Like, I think 640 is generally the highest I will go. But this was one of those cases. Just said, okay, great. You know, that you have no choice. So at ISO 1600 at f/1.8, I think I was getting a shutter speed of like 1/100th.
Right.
Which is kind of what you want. You know, with an 85 lens, is kind of as low as you want to go. And so that I was able to squeeze that out, but still... At ISO 1600, this rendered a really good image with a little bit of cleanup in Lightroom, of course, with the noise reduction, but very little.
Yeah.
So if you ever are thinking, man, should I buy that prime lens? This tells you yes.
Okay.
There you go.
Good stuff.
Okay, photo challenge this week. It was carry over from last week. Last week we talked about the spotlight effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the challenge this week. So let's go ahead and let's have a look at yours. I just picked yours arbitrarily.
Okay.
Would you rather I didn't?
No. We can do mine.
All right. Like what's going on here, man. Now, granted, I have had 8 seconds to look at this because you uploaded it 8 seconds before we started.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm kind of this is a real time decompression of deconstruction of this image.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is like two sets of wooden letters, you know, people have them up, and I kind of have them on a shelf, like a photo shelf that's got a few pictures. And so I have on one side, I have the little, you know, wooden love letters, and then mm-hmm. I have family, and then they're just both white wood letters that can stand up. And I think years ago, I did a photo. I remember doing something with the love and then with a little statue that had a mother and a baby with a spotlight effect. So oh. when we were doing this, I thought, and I did it in a very similar manner, I thought, I'm going to do something with those letters. I was just looking around, and I was looking around, and I thought you were going to do, you know, a kid's car. And so I was literally just searching the house for something to sort of photograph that would be small enough to kind of do the spotlight effect in the way we discussed on the last episode. Found these letters, and I thought, okay, because I remember doing something with one set of letters, I'm going to do two sets of letters and just see how the light plays off of these. So the interesting thing is this is exactly done as we discussed with the one flash and a snoot. I used gray photo paper to kind of, you know, smooth out the surface for the photo. And then I just basically put the two sets of letters in different sort of positions. And then I photographed it just to see what would happen with the light. So the interesting thing is based on the distance from the light and the shadows and whatnot, how different with one light those two sets of letters appear. So I really liked how, you know, the letters in the background, the love, kind of come off as a gray, and then the family comes off as a dark black, just based on where the position relative to the light they were. And I just kind of you know, positioned them, probably took about 10 different versions of this from different angles and vantage points to see what I liked. And chose this one because I like the effect. It sort of reminded me almost as like a little screensaver or something. Like it's not a photo that I would do anything out, but I liked the effect, and I liked that it was one photo straight out of camera. Like there's really no, I changed it to black and white, but it really didn't make any difference because it was just the flash. So it pretty much looked like this, and then I dialed in the contrast a little bit, and that's it. Game over.
No, I like it. I mean, there's nothing, no criticism of this. I like that effect. I like how it is. One is, you know, basically black with a highlighted kicker. And I'm just going to repeat everything you just said, but I like that. The only thing that I would add next time, because if you do redo this, is play with the angle a little bit. Like I might adjust the position of the top light, the only light, but the position to sort of see a little bit more of the family shadow, spell out family, because it disappears. You know what it is.
Yeah. I have a couple that do exactly that, but then I didn't like something else, and it was usually where the spotlight shadow falls, or it was where the, like, how much of the love you could see. So there's, I didn't get it exactly bang. I totally agree with your critique, because I didn't get it exactly perfect in the 10 photos to what I had envisioned. And plus playing with the angle of the shadow, like I didn't like when the family shadow fell right directly towards the camera either. It was, there's something right that I didn't like about that either. So yeah, but I'm still not sure what I would do with it. Even if I got it better, I'm still not sure what I would do with it. So unlikely to redo it unless I came up with something that was overall better. Like, again, this was a fun little game to play with and see what you can do with one light, but I'm trying to think of a better application for it than two kind of wooden carved letters, sets of wooden carved letters.
Well, I think the family part is cool. What I would consider, not just for the photo, I mean, it's a lot of effort for one photo, is the whole love family thing a little redundant, a little bit like the words themselves, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, we know you like it. Love your family. I love your family. We're a lot of love going around here. We're good.
Yeah.
If you had one that said Schwartz and in the background, Schwartz family, this would be like a great Christmas card / just a postcard you could send to people or whatever it is. Like, that would be a much more useful image.
Mm-hmm. I don't have Schwartz wooden carved letters.
Well, not yet. I didn't want to spoil your birthday, but here we go. Yeah. Once I get my new jigsaw, then I'll make you.
All right.
And ship it to you from.
Perfect. It'll cost $4,000 to ship it from Germany.
Right. Right. That is something I can do, but it's not going to happen. So there's that. No, but really, really cool effect, and definitely something to sort of work on. Like, if in a more practical application, this will come in handy.
Yeah, and for those, you know, interested in playing around with this, yeah, there's some neat effects. I didn't foresee that it would look like this by putting the two sets of letters in one sort of top side light. I didn't foresee that it would have that kind of color differential effect. So yeah, there's definitely something that can be done here that's more useful. So we'll see. We'll see if
and
I come
for
up
for the most part, as very similar to my submission this week, wildly simple.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a little bit of setup, but for what effect you get, it's not that hard to do.
Well, let's look at yours now with that with that lead in.
With that, yeah, with that. Wow, this is terrible.
No, I like yours. I think it's really good and sort of exactly what you would have done had it been a toy car, right? Like it's really straight 100% right over top of the baseball just based on the shadow that you're getting from the ball. So this is directly overhead, probably just out of frame, correct? Because the spotlight, I mean, we know the size of a baseball, assuming that that's a normal size baseball. The actual spotlight is very tight. Like there's not much room here around the baseball. So this has got to be pretty darn close to the ball, right?
It is. It's a very long snoot, and it is. That's my EX, the 580 EX2, which means it can zoom all the way to 105, which it is. 1/128 power because of, you know, snooted that long right out of frame. That's still a lot of light. You know, and this is just shot in my office. My office, which just currently is just a complete mess. There's clutter everywhere. And so I just, everything had to just fall off to blackness, which I didn't hang anything up. Just my office, just pulled the drapes, that's all. And then basically knocked down the ambient. So ISO 100, 1/200th of a second, and all the way to, I think it was F11 is where this ended up. And that just kills everything except for the spotlight right over above, right over top.
And what's the surface, yeah, that you've got the ball on?
That's my kid's little IKEA chair, like a little wooden chair they have that they're at their drawing table.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's had I shot a car, which I intended to do. I think I even shot my big mouth off about that last week or 2 weeks ago, and said,
yeah,
I will shoot a car. Mark my words. I didn't.
No.
But the reason was I was getting all set up to shoot today and thought, actually, despite the fact that, you know, starting now for the next 6 months, most of my challenge photos will probably be baseball centric due to the amount of time I spend there. I'm still going to shoot this. I wanted to shoot the ball because of the shape, because I really liked like the idea of how the light would essentially sort of wrap around, like how it would kind of fall off as it got to the equator of the ball and then basically fall off the darkness, but then the bounce from the wood, from the light-colored wood, would come up and fill in the bottom of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really, this is exactly what I imagined it would look like. And so I was much more interested in that than I was shooting Lightning McQueen again, which is what it probably would have been,
right?
But I also that would have dictated I would not have shot it on this surface, you know. So I thought about, you know, well, what kind of surface like would you expect? Well, you'd probably use red dirt, right? Because we like our infield is the red dirt that you typically see.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't going to the park for that. Mm-hmm. This was done at the house, and I would have to do that at night because, you know, I want to kill the ambient. So if it's bright sunshine, forget it. You got to go way too far to kill the ambient and too much flash power. I wasn't going to go at night. The grass, maybe do grass, but that wasn't going to be what I was looking for. I wanted that reflection, right?
Yeah.
So I went with something that kind of, you know, could be the bench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be. No, I think it was a good choice.
Yeah. So, and then while I was shooting it, I thought, you know, this is going to actually, you know, do double duty. I'm going to put this on the Instagram and the Facebook and sort of, you know, help promote our team. And so I shot it very specifically balanced this way so that it was sort of the ball was down low enough, you know, negative space at the top where I could put a title, which I didn't know what the title was going to be.
Is that opening day or what's that?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Here in Europe, the day goes first. It's the 22nd of April. That's how they do things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it goes that way. But So I thought about it. Thought, oh boy, you know, spring is coming, or blah, 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 a bunch of nonsense. And I thought, you know what? Just be very, very, very un-German, and just don't put up hardly anything. Just a date, and let people make the leap themselves. Now in Germany, that's everything is very, very specific here. So this isn't really done, and it's probably confusing. All the people who are seeing it right now are very, very confused. I don't apologize.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just how we do it. So, anyway, that was the plan. It would do double duty as a, you know, as an ad for, hey, our season's coming.
Yeah. Okay. No, I like it. Did you try it with a new ball as well?
No, I didn't have a new ball.
Oh, I'm just curious. Like, I'm not sure that a new ball would be better or worse or anything. I'm just curious as to what it would have looked like with just the sharp white on the same background. Like, it might actually be better this way because the ball and sort of the brown on the top of the ball, like kind of the wear matches better probably with the brown chair that you used as the background or as the bottom. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm just curious as if you tried it. So
no, if I had one, I wouldn't have. I like the amount of scuff on this ball. Mm-hmm. It's about right.
Yeah,
you'd never get it into a game. Obviously, this is now a batting practice ball, but it looks better for. It kind of look, you know how gritty baseball players are.
Mm-hmm. Super gritty.
Yeah. So the takeaways here, the other things that you hinted at is the very, very tight spot. That was important to me. I didn't want a wide throw. I wanted it to be very, very tight. It was important to me that the shadow below it be symmetrical, which is I was very, very careful to place the flash directly above for that reason. And have about as much throw in behind as I do in front in terms of the spotlight part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was all part of the thing. Now the one little, because I hadn't shot it specifically for this ad or whatever it was in my head, and I don't think I'm wrong here. The ball is not perfectly centered in the image.
Okay.
And I think that's a minor problem because the Hawks logo is centered. That is absolutely centered in Photoshop. So you can see it doesn't quite line up with the North Pole of the ball. If we're going to go with the equator, we've got to go North Pole. It doesn't quite line up.
Okay, I didn't notice. So it's obviously close enough that, I mean, my eye did not pick up on that. So I think you're splitting hairs a little bit.
Yeah, no, I am splitting hairs, and people are still, no one will see that because they're all confused about what this even means.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter.
No, I think you're good, yeah.
There you go. All right. I'll shoot a car next time, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. All right, our topic this week is, because our considering our monthly challenge for March is still ongoing, is shallow depth of field, I thought we better revisit depth of field. Because we talked about it a long, long time ago, right?
Sure.
You were there. You were there 6 years ago when we did a show about it. Yeah, that's kind of the big.
Well, I was going to say, I think there's been kind of somewhat ongoing dialogue about depth of field a little bit, maybe? No?
It shows up pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
But in terms of, so we'll do something else then. Okay, what do you have in mind?
No, that's not what I was, don't go like pouting away from the schoolyard. No.
I'm not being defensive. You're being defensive. Why am I being defensive?
The topic is perfectly acceptable, if not tremendously awesome. just saying that I pray that it's been a little bit more recent than 6 years ago that we've sort of had discussions about depth of field.
In terms of a show dedicated to it though.
You're absolutely right. Okay, so this is really, we should have done this about 3 years ago.
Yeah, if I said it, it would sound like bragging. So I'm glad you said it.
Okay.
Since in those 6 years, I think we've both, you know, learned a lot and we can talk a little bit more about it. So quick recap on the basics. Let's talk about how to achieve shallow depth of field.
So aperture has a huge impact on it.
Probably I would say it's the biggest one, but not. Yes, I mean it is, but is it the first one that you get in touch with? Probably not. That's probably the second way you sort of figure it out. But yes, aperture is huge.
So a larger aperture, which would be a lower f-stop number,
correct,
would be more blurred in the background.
You want to open that aperture as wide as possible.
Right.
So when you hear us talking about our 85mm f1.8, that means the widest aperture is an f1.8. If you shoot it there, wide open, that's going to blur your background.
Right.
Okay. That's one. It's one. There's one part of it. There's a whole sort of triangle of things that components that will lead to an out of focus background or shallow depth of field. The other one that you probably may have inadvertently, if you're brand new at photography, and you may have stumbled into accidentally, is focal length.
Right. So a longer focal length equals more blur in the background. So if I shot an f5.6 aperture on a 200mm lens, the background would be blurrier than if it was a 50mm lens.
All things being equal, yes.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. So long focal length and wide open aperture. Now, what people usually you can do is that the first tip I give, you know, even point and shoot people, just like all you have is just your regular now $100, you know, point and shoot. So I say back up, zoom in, you get better pictures for the most part.
Right.
That's the shorthand version of it, and that means you're getting a long focal length, you're going to get better looking people and a slightly blurred background. Even on your point and shoot, that's going to happen.
Right.
You can't tell those same people, well, yeah, crank the aperture wide open.
Correct.
They don't know what you're talking about, or they can't on that particular camera. So that's kind of where you first come into contact with shallow depth of field is with the long focal length. But there's also another component that you can use to control, and that's the distance of from your camera to the subject and the subject to the background.
Right.
So if there's a large, like if you're shooting in an open field, you're going to get a much shallower, effective shallower depth of field. If there's a large distance between your subject and the background.
Right. Versus if they're standing 10 feet from a barn, you're going to lose a lot of that effect.
Correct. And then, you know, conversely or inversely or traversely, I really don't know. Thanks. If your subject is standing far, far away from you,
right,
you know, it's unlikely that the background will be blurred. Whereas if they're right up front, I mean, that ratio plays a big, big role in it. So,
right,
back up, zoom in, have your subject stand closer. You're going to get a shallow depth of field.
Okay. All right.
Now, when it comes down to achieving a depth of field, a shallow depth of field with aperture versus with focal length, do you have a preference?
Not really. I don't really think of it in those terms.
Mm-hmm.
So my answer is I'm not sure because I've never really done that comparison head to head. I don't think I have a preference. So, I mean, for me, there's other decisions that I'm making about my lens and focal length that has nothing to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm not sure. Like, were you looking for a specific answer?
No, I have a preference.
Oh, okay, so but I'd be interested to hear.
It's like 60-40, though. It's not. It's definitely not a landslide. But if I know I'm going to go and shoot an image, if I'm specifically shooting an image where I'm going to blur the background, and I have a choice and I have the flexibility to do this, I prefer to do it with the long lens.
Okay.
I just like the image better. Like I would rather shoot it with at 200 mils at say an f5.6 than I would at an f1.4 on the 50mm.
Right. And I think that the distinction you're making is with the lenses that you have. Because
yes,
the 70-200, you know, f4 lens that we both own, the L lens from Canon, It's just a more pleasing bokeh that you get from that lens than the 50 millimeter 1.4 you would get. It's a different quality of bokeh, right? So,
I think you have no idea.
So if you had the 50 millimeter,
listen. You don't even. It's kind of funny you bring that up, man.
Okay.
Next week on the show, already booked interview with Don Komarechka, all about the quality of bokeh.
Okay.
Look at you.
Yeah, well,
all
I was just
grows up.
I was thinking that if you had the whatever the 50 millimeter 1.2 or the 85 millimeter 1.2 versus the 70-200, now again you're probably going to go the other way and say, "Wow, the quality is better on the 85 mm 1.2," right?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean at that price it better be, but yeah. It is. I've seen images and it is fantastic. That's just part of it. And that's usually like for most people, much like the blue and the orange in the movie Singles, it's for the average person, it's just something that you probably don't appreciate. Like you do appreciate, but you don't know that you appreciate it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you have no idea what specifically is going on that makes you like that image more, but you definitely do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I like both. I like both. I mean, I like shooting with the 85 or the 50, you know, wide open for certain things, but I just, my go-to, again, 60-40 is the 200 mil.
Okay.
So, but when it comes to shallow depth of field, why? Why are we trying to do this in the first place?
I think because it makes for, you know, more interest in the image. It sort of highlights or features a component of your image. So you can kind of, again, separate your subject from the background better, but at the same time, that background blur also creates just a sort of more interesting image.
Plus, it makes you a real photographer.
That too, yeah. You get to tell your friends why you're better than them, but they can just figure it out for themselves.
Yeah, they don't even know why. They just know. Yeah. No, it's traditionally been hard to achieve with point and shoots, like or your phone even, like using your iPhone. Traditionally, you're not getting that narrow depth of field, which is what everyone kind of achieves. It's so popular, though, that, like, doesn't the new iPhone has, like, a built-in fake version?
I think so, yeah. I'm pretty sure you're right, but I don't know because I haven't actually seen these photos.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I don't really know how it does it. I think it uses two cameras and there's some sort of a software thing where it judges distance and just says, all right, go, out of focus. Yeah,
right.
Some sort of an algorithm, much like you used to solve the Rubik's Cube.
Sure.
It has its own little algorithm to basically fake this. Take something that is a byproduct of physics, of the physical world, and then recreating that digitally because that's what we like.
Right.
It's that popular. So, as you said, it is a great way to isolate your subject from distracting backgrounds like we talked about a couple weeks ago. I think I use the word isolate. I prefer your word highlight.
Okay.
It's a great way to basically I would normally say focus on the object, but we're already talking about focus and out of focus, so that's confusing.
Okay.
It's a great way to have the viewer of the photo basically go put their eye where you want it, where you want it to go.
Right.
Yeah. This is just Shakespeare coming pouring out of my mouth right now. It's terrible. Yeah. So, so that's a great way to basically bring your all the focus on that image, but on that subject. It's also a great way to completely eliminate things that you don't want in the frame without actually eliminating them.
Right. You can just turn them to blurry mush.
Yeah. As can happen. I mean, sometimes you're shooting in situations like maybe you're in town or wherever it is and you're like, forget it. Like there's just so much going on. I can't control it. I'm just going to shoot at f1.4 and just get rid of everything.
Right.
For the most part. So that's why we want to go with shallow depth of field. But how shallow?
Ooh. Season to taste.
Now you do.
Yeah. I think for a long time it was just everything out of focus because that's awesome.
That's right.
And then somewhere along the line, you figure out, okay, maybe not always completely out of focus. There's a happy medium, and sometimes you want that background, but you just don't want that background distracting from your subject completely. So let's keep it just a little bit in focus, right?
Do you remember the beginning, though, when you first got the... You had the 50mm 1.8, right?
Yeah, that was the first prime for me, yeah.
And it's like, well, why would I shoot at f2? This goes to 1.8.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And I did the same. Everything was just f1.8, man. Like, wow, like that's, you're looking, how can I do this? And because you go so long with the very, very deep depth of field, everything
yeah.
in focus.
The kit lens, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, or that, or point and shoot even.
Yeah.
You know, and so now it becomes a massive overcorrect where it's like, all right, here we go. You know, I did this.
I definitely did it.
Everyone listening, if you have a prime lens, I guarantee you did this at one point, unless you're still doing it. And then that point is now. The danger here, though, besides the fact that all your pictures all look identical in style, the danger I find is that the depth of field, the shallow depth of field, becomes the subject instead of a component of your image.
That's right. It's definitely. Like, wow. Yeah, that's look, deep.
Yeah.
or shallow. I don't know.
Nice. Nicely played. Then after a while, you start to settle in. And you start to think about using the depth of field, hopefully, as a compositional tool.
Right.
So you start to get comfortable and decide how much depth of field is right for your image, right?
Yep.
With that, before we go too much further, I pulled some images just to illustrate this.
Okay.
About good and bad bokeh. Now,
let's see bad. I want to see bad first.
I put two images up there. So there's one of my wife's ring. That's the day I asked her to marry me.
Okay, yeah, I see it. Why is the diamond so small?
Because she's a farm girl. Legitimately.
Like, either the diamond's small or she has the biggest hands I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, no, she's massive hands. It's absolutely small. At the point that I bought her the diamond, we did not own a house.
Right.
And so we're practical people.
You're saving for the house, yeah.
Yes, yes. I'm not making excuses. I really do not care. The only reason she got a diamond at all is just because of the sort of tradition behind it. She could care less.
Yeah. No, I'm just giving you a hard time because my wife has a totally recycled ring, so.
Well, that's even better.
Yeah, yeah.
You just one-upped me.
Yeah.
I thought when I picked this image out, I thought, I'm kind of laying a softball out over the plate here.
Yeah.
Go ripping. But no, like this is.
She still looks happy though. Like, maybe that's just bokeh. She might be crying herself, like tears rolling down her face that I can't see.
Oh, it wasn't the ring that made her cry.
Okay,
it was who she said yes to. So I took this right after we got home. Actually, I just gave it to her at the airport. Got home, so this is like an hour later. Took this photo. As you can see, she's way too out of focus. Like to be practical. Now you can figure out what's going on here.
Yeah, I agree. She's too out of focus. I'd like a little bit more, but it's this is a photo that you see. I mean, a zillion wedding photographers take with this degree of out of focusness, out of focusness.
True.
So I don't know. It's not that unusual. Maybe because I've seen this type of shot many times before.
But you tend to see this shot in context with a bunch of other shots from that wedding.
True, yes.
And thus, that adds the context. So, just on its own, not a good photo.
Right, okay.
Now, the only reason, I went through, I said, hey, like, I'm going to go through and find some bad bokeh images just to show. I don't have that many. Not because I didn't take them, because I didn't keep them.
You just delete them, yeah.
Get out. You don't need. So this was one that I kept, obviously for documentation reasons, more so than anything. More so than that's this is not going on the wall.
What's wrong with her pinky? Like, she have that thing in a meat grinder or something?
Wow, that's my wife you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay, moving on.
I don't know. I'll have to actually go ask her. Yeah.
It takes a dramatic, I guess that's her left hand, so that takes a left turn. Is that a left
turn? Right turn. Pointing straight out, so right turn, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe she's a pickpocket by night. What do I know? Yeah. Why don't we focus on one small thing with my wife and just beat it into the ground? We'll body shame her.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
She's not listening anyway. So.
No. She'll appreciate it, though.
Okay.
I'm going to digitally straighten that now just to avoid. Yeah. Great. Married a circus gimp.
Yeah.
Thanks, Adam.
All right.
Mm-hmm. So there's that. That's one image that just is really, really bad. So I picked another one just to further illustrate. So this one was actually shot on film. 99% sure it was slide film. We went to Normandy, I forget, call it 10 years ago, roughly, nine summers ago, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
From here, we took the camper, drove up to Normandy. So this is a place, I believe this is Saint-Mère-Église, which if you saw the Band of Brothers, this is one of the places they landed in.
Okay, I haven't seen it. Yeah,
it's the church, and so in this area, very like this whole area of Normandy, despite what you hear, big fans of Americans, for real. Okay. That's why the flag.
Okay,
so this is in northern France, and they are. It is, yeah. Don't have to get into the politics of why they're big fans, but they are. And so I wanted to take this, you know, the historic church. Want to snap this with the American flag in the background. I thought, oh, great, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to really blow out the background. Now, it's not wildly out of focus.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't out of focus enough, and it's not focused enough.
Yeah, it's in a weird kind of like zone of
yes.
Yeah, I don't even – you're exactly right. That's exactly what I was thinking when I saw it. It's one or the other. Either bring it a little bit more into focus, which it would be a perfectly fine photo as a snapshot if you just had it at f11 and just had it all in focus, or f8 mm-hmm. or whatever you want. But what is this? Is this an f2.0 or 1.8?
Probably. It's a 50mm f1.4 lens. I never keep – you know, EXIF data with a pencil. So
right.
I don't know what I shot this at, but it would have been likely wide open.
Yeah.
Being a cloudy day, I'm guessing this was ISO 64 I probably shot.
640?
No, 64.
That's like such this is, a,
yeah.
You
that,
can
yeah,
do
yeah.
that?
Yeah, well, this is on film.
Oh, okay, sorry, yeah.
So this is slide film.
Yeah.
And so I think it might have actually been ISO 100 that I shot. Hard to remember. But the FTB I shot with has a max shutter speed of 1/1000th of a second. So probably is it at f2 in around there, considering the cloudy day. I managed to get that low. Otherwise, you know, it's just going to be overblown. Also, I'd like to see more of the 87 Camry in the foreground. Like, hey, get the whole thing in. What does the hood look like?
Yeah,
you don't know. But anyway, bad image. Just I have other images from there that I like. This was not one of them. It just didn't work out.
Right.
So, and that's a big reason why. I did include one that I think is a good use of bokeh. So here's my wife and daughter. My daughter, she can look closely. She has normal fingers. My wife, horribly disfigured.
Yeah.
this was us in Vancouver a couple summers ago, and out at our favorite place that I think you were probably there this day.
Maybe.
And is a very, very nice bokeh.
Yeah, and this is probably an F4 or 5.6 or something, right?
Probably. Don't remember.
But I mean, just I know where that is. And I mean, if you shot this, because that background is quite a distance from your subjects, that if you shot this at a 2.8, that background would have been much more of a blur.
Mm-hmm.
which still might be okay, but this is kind of like right smack in the wheelhouse of how much of that city you want to see. Like it's nice. It's doesn't distract from your subjects at all, but it adds something to the photo, and yeah, just a really really nice image. So yeah, I'm gonna say F4 here.
Probably an F4, considering the time of day. Probably the 85mm. At F4, F5, 6, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to give you the nice balance that we're looking for. So there you go. That's what happens when you start settling in and using it on. Like this was on purpose. This wasn't like, oh, whoops, I got it. I knew very specifically that's what I wanted to get.
Mm-hmm.
So after time, after making a ton of errors, you will get to this point where you can settle in and know going in that what you want to do.
The other subtle thing that you failed to mention, and this goes back to an episode maybe, I don't know what it was, 2-3 weeks ago, is that your example very good image is also a perfectly timed magic hour in a beautiful location, and your other ones are either overcast or indoors. And so had you done the other two photos at magic hour, they might also be winners as well. So
it'd be better. But.
Yeah, they'd definitely be better. But yeah. Not trying to sort of say that your bokeh isn't the only thing here that's better. Magic Hour is awesome.
Magic Hour is awesome.
Yeah.
Hence the name.
Yeah.
So there you go. They can decide if you want a slight blur, big blur, whatever it is. Just enough for the viewers to fill in the blanks, that kind of thing. Also, one more thing to sort of consider, and it's not really evident in this photo. It's not a great example for this, but maybe you want a gradual shallowing, meaning that you can see the foreground, middle ground, and background so that right. You can actually see the background go out of focus and get gradually more and more blurred.
Right.
Sometimes if you just shoot them against, you know, a distant background, it looks like it's Photoshopped and it's not exactly not the effect you want.
Gotcha.
So, point is, after a while, you will get to know the exact aperture and focal length combo that will give you the results that you want. Whatever they are, whether it's super shallow, whether it's deep, in between, whatever it is, you're going to start to get a feel for what combo is going to work. So much so that you will not even use the depth of field preview button that you already don't use.
Yeah, I've to be honest, I've never used it.
No, I never use it either.
Yeah.
You know, and probably should have early on. Like, for the listener, how many of you actually do you know that your camera has a depth of field preview button? Because when you're looking, if you have a DSLR, you're looking through the viewfinder, you're looking at it as wide open. That's mm-hmm. That's the lens as wide open to let as much light in, so you can get, you know, you can see your image, and then when the photo happens, it stops down. So the depth of field will not be how you see it through the viewfinder.
Right.
There's a button that will recreate that for you that you probably don't even know you have.
Yeah, it's kind of in a bit of a funny location on most DSLRs, kind of in mm-hmm. the front by the lens. I tried it once just to see what it was, and I was like, yeah, I don't need that.
No. After a while, you'll just get used to what you'll know what it's going to look like anyways.
Yeah.
And a lot of people shoot and then chimp, right?
I mean, yeah, there's that too, yeah. I did a lot of that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Less now, but a lot then. So, okay, that's in-depth on depth of field. That's how we dive deep into that.
Yeah.
Monthly challenge for month of March is shallow depth of field, so hopefully this will get you most of the way there. That's the plan.
Perfect.
Weekly challenge, Adam. I don't have one this week.
Oh, okay. So is it not next week that's the monthly challenge, or is it 2 weeks?
We're a couple weeks away.
Oh dear. I got nothing. Let's just all not right. Let's not do one.
12 months in a row now. I'm not having anything.
How about just fun? Let's do something like it's spring. So spring, I mean, there's been a lot of snow and winter. How about something that's just fun? That's pretty wide open, right, for the listeners? Fun.
You want to go fun or you want to go joy?
It can be, well, I that's joy is sort of fun. Yeah. You want joy?
No, I'm asking
good,
you.
I'm good with either. Either all of right. those I can work with.
No, we'll go with the F word.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great one.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just call it that.
Might be confusing. Hashtag F word.
Okay, fun.
Yeah, we're gonna get the wrong kind of people on that. Okay. Okay. All right, fun it is. Websites, Adam, where can people go to find your stuff?
They can find it at adamschwartz.ca and Once in a Blue Moon on Instagram.
Oh, we can all look forward to that.
Yeah, just look for the blue moon.
You can find my stuff at alanattridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find all the links, photos, all the stuff that we just talked about.
Okay.
And that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.